On Encyclopod, we're talking about radio with special guests Ewan Gilmore,
hey,
James Perry,
hey,
Gavin Ling, that's me, and your host Alex Perry.
Hello and welcome to Encyclopod. We're back after a short break
short
in our schedule. Yeah, I could spend ages trying to justify why we've been away for nearly a year, but basically, it was a number of things, including starting uni, which I mentioned on, I think, the last episode. And I kind of expected that would cause some problems with this, but, you know. Also, the mixer that we bought to try and help the production of this failed miserably. What kind of mixer was it, James?
I forget the name now.
I think so.
There you go, you can finally beep something.
Okay, good. Yes, Gavin just said a word that I will beep. Meaning bad, basically. Okay, I should introduce these two new people. Gavin's been on before, if you can remember that far back.
I can remember that far back.
Good.
My diligent research into Egypt.
Yeah, I remember that. That was a classic moment.
That'll be on our greatest hits.
Yeah, it will, definitely. Oh, that'll be fun to do a greatest hits, but we should probably have more than five episodes before we do that. Yeah. So here we are recording a sixth one. This one's on radio. Oh, I haven't introduced these two still. James, you're
Hello.
Who exactly?
I'm your brother, Alex, if you've forgotten again.
Yeah, sorry. What's Alex. Up with you then, eh?
I think that would take more than an episode to go into. Okay, I'm here to tell you about the technical side of radio mainly, because I'm an electronic engineer, so I should know. But
you.
Basically, you're a robot.
Yeah.
That is correct.
Yeah.
What, James?
Affirmative, you should have said.
I was trying to sound like Data.
Oh, okay.
So I've been watching too much
he's
Star
not a robot,
Trek.
Is
wait,
he?
He's an android.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Yeah.
Geek cred destroyed.
You don't have to show that. You
but
don't
an
have to.
Android is not the same as a robot.
Well, I suppose it's probably not, actually.
Okay.
or that is correct.
Okay,
as
Ewan,
an android, my positronic brain is... I can't, sorry.
Anyway, Ewan Gilmore.
Hello.
Who are you?
I'm a human being.
Yeah, right.
Okay, fine, it's not true. I'm your friend, maybe?
Yes.
An acquaintance, you know who I am.
Yes, I know who you
no
are.
No one else
You haven't
might.
Just sort of showed up in my house like that Stuart guy who was on the first one. Okay, is that all the introduction that... you two need? Do you feel that you've been
I think I've
adequately
been
represented
introduced
there?
Enough.
Okay.
Introduced enough.
So, what have you all been up to recently in the long time since the Ancient Egypt episode?
Eventually, I listened to the Ancient Egypt episode all the way
oh,
through.
Oh, good. Oh, you two have heard... I don't know if Ewan has, actually.
I've listened to all the others. I've been very impressed.
James is a follower of the series and is impressed.
I love them for long car journeys.
Oh, good. Well, here's another one to add to your...
I'm kind of convinced now, that's though, that all the listeners have also been on the show.
Probably, yeah.
Possibly.
At this stage,
I mean, if you want to build up a following, a good tip is probably don't take a 10-month-long break just as you're getting started.
After five episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can't promise that's not going to happen again, but for now we're back at least, so...
Hooray!
Just add us to your RSS reader or whatever and forget we exist until we... do another one. Okay. Radio. That's the topic of today. Does anyone have anything to say about radio? We should go around a circle and you can share your initial, like...
And we're in a circle.
...feelings about radio.
I like radio. It's a useful tool. It gets news across. If you don't want to look at news, you can listen to news.
Mm-hmm. You can.
Yeah. Well said.
Thank you. Oh, applause as well.
I like radio. I don't listen to it much anymore, but I used to listen to it quite a bit. And I learned about how it worked when I was at uni. That was before they had FM, obviously. But Actually, that's such a terribly geeky joke, no one's going to get
it. They will after this episode.
Okay, so at the end I'll say it again, and then it'll be funny.
Yeah, we'll or this can be like an Arrested Development moment where you say it now and no one laughs, and you go back after listening to the whole thing and it's funny.
Ah, that's a good idea.
So is that all you think about radio for now?
Kind of.
Okay, Gavin? Interesting fact, I once played a radio DJ in a play. Oh yeah, you did. There's a fact.
Ready Eddie, was it?
Yep. Ready, steady, talk to you, Eddie.
On the radio. Yeah. Lots of R's there.
Yeah. It's true. Alliteration, you know.
Well, at least
two.
Yeah. Okay. So, I have the most disorganized notes I've ever had for this, which, you know...
Given you've had 10 months for them.
I know. That's probably why they're so disorganized. I didn't have the focus that I usually need. I just sort of learned gradually about it over the course of... months and months. So we have stuff about the invention of radio, the history of it, and the technical side, which James is covering, and a few little miscellaneous things about radio. And where would be a good place to start? I'm thinking possibly the invention of radio, although it's maybe just a huge long monologue for me.
We'll interject with silly jokes
and puns.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm going to completely butcher all these people's names. Not them. Not actually them. I'm not going to murder them. Most of them are already dead.
Hooray. Not hooray.
Well,
I mean...
No, we should be grateful to these people because they helped...
give us radio.
Radio, which not only... I mean, radio is really more than one thing. It's a technology and it's a sort of... it's a sort of medium as well. It's a type of entertainment. Maybe we should start with the Oxford English Dictionary definition of radio, which is something I always want to start with.
Good idea.
Let's see what Oxford has to say.
Their first definition, the transmission and reception of electromagnetic waves of radio frequency, especially those carrying sound messages.
Ooh.
Second definition, the activity or industry of broadcasting sound programs to the public. Third definition, an apparatus for receiving radio programs, or an apparatus capable of both receiving and transmitting radio messages between individuals, ships, planes, etc.
Yeah.
Hmm. And the word radio is an abbreviation of radio telegraphy.
Ah.
Which, I mean, means the same thing, but, you know, it got simplified over the years.
Thankfully.
Yeah, because who wants to say I'm just going to...
listen to the radio telegraphy.
Yeah, no
machine.
One wants to say that.
They'd say the wireless, though, wouldn't they?
They would say the wireless.
In Britain, they would.
Yes.
America, I don't think, get rid of that.
Did you say America?
That. America.
Did he say America?
I thought he said America.
You and his drinking.
That too. And will be for the whole podcast.
Yeah, it's the first time we've had alcohol while recording. We'll see how this works out for us. Maybe we'll make it a regular thing.
Sure, it will be grind.
We'll ban it.
Possibly, let's see the end.
Anyway, so radio. Before radio was invented, it kind of strikes me as kind of weird because people didn't know that it was possible. Imagine, if you will, a world without it, and you might get an idea of how weird it would have seemed. The idea that you could transmit messages through the air completely invisibly, you know, without hearing them in between. Where they're transmitted and where they're received. It's just an invisible, magical sort of force that can be harnessed. Yeah. So the first few people on my timeline were sort of people who found weird things going on that they couldn't quite explain, and the world looked on them as a bit mad and didn't really think what they were describing was real or you know, possible even. 1820... Hans Christian Oersted, the O in his last name is a weird O with a slash across it, but
wow.
This Danish guy notices his compass going wonky when he turns on a battery nearby and inadvertently discovers that electric currents radiate magnetic fields.
Ooh.
Do they actually, James?
Yes.
Well, that's how you can create an electromagnet.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, I don't understand electromagnetism, but that's very connected
Let's
to radio.
Do magnetism one time.
Yeah, we should. It's sort of connected quite a lot, isn't it, James?
Yeah.
I mean, radio is basically electromagnetic waves.
Yes, it is. So did he like more about those later?
So did he like report it to someone or something?
Well, probably did, but you know, if you can't explain something, it's a bit. Well, back then, it seems like people just ignored it mostly. Although there were a few people who became obsessed with it. Michael Faraday did stuff. What?
Sorry, he must have been the man who discovered the farad, which is a unit of measurement.
Is it?
In physics. What's it for? I can't remember.
I'm just going to go look that
I
up on Wikipedia.
I can't remember either, but you're right.
See, there's some. I think it might be to do with, like, magnets.
It might be.
Is that how you spell it?
I think I've heard of Faraday, though, so.
Was it a or capacitance maybe it was measurement?
Oh,
yes,
yeah,
it's the unit of capacitance, of course.
Oh, and it is named after him, you're right.
Yeah.
Wow, I wouldn't have known
how
that.
How exciting!
Wow, we discovered something new. Well, I think people knew it already, judging by the fact
considering
that
considering you found it on Wikipedia.
Yes, yeah, true.
I think some of the...
Something new for us.
...decent editor of people.
Some of them. Anyway, Michael Faraday, in 1831, he did his funky thang with electromagnetic induction.
That's
what I have written here. I can't actually remember what he did.
Whatever it was, it doesn't sound right.
He did lots of experiments in the area of electromagnetism, including he basically invented the electric motor.
Okay, good for him.
Which relies on electromagnetism.
Yes.
So, jump forward to 1865, a guy called James Clerk Maxwell.
Ooh, he was named after the building I work in.
He was named after the building you work in.
Or vice versa.
We'll reverse that.
Yes.
So he was a very influential figure in the scientific world. Apparently, Einstein had a picture of James Clerk Maxwell on his wall.
Oh, nice.
He was a theoretical physicist and mathematician who was interested in electricity and magnetism and the weird place where they meet, electromagnetism. He theorized that light is an electromagnetic phenomenon. Which it is.
Yeah, right.
It is. He was also Scottish, by the way.
Hooray!
Oh,
and
good.
In 1865, he published A Dynamical Theory of the Electromagnetic Field, which described radio waves for the first time, really. It recognized their existence, which was a rare thing back then.
How did he describe them?
He just described them as being, as existing.
Ooh, short description then.
I don't know the details of his description.
They're pretty wibbly-wobbly, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
Timey
That's probably
wimey.
What he said, yeah.
Not quite timey-wimey.
I'm just going to say that James Clerk Maxwell said that, definitely.
Good.
The theory was widely rejected for a very long time, but, as we will see, not forever.
Ooh.
Now, another weird guy who was ignored by most people was Mahlon Loomis. And I don't know if that's how you pronounce that.
Do a pause while a student opens his beer.
And I pick up all the notes that I just dropped.
I timed it well.
Wow. Okay, anyway.
Well done.
Carrying on from that little interruption. Mahlon Loomis, an American guy who was a dentist who lived in Washington, D.C., claims to have transmitted signals between two kites with wires for strings 14 miles apart in 1866, showing that discharging the static electricity in the wire of one kite deflected the needle of a galvanometer attached to the other.
Why would a dentist be doing that?
Because he was sort of obsessed with doing weird experiments and stuff. Oh, he also
that's kind of bad for a dentist.
He was sort of an inventor. He invented a process for making artificial teeth. Apart from any of this,
maybe he was just trying to work out why some people pick up Radio 2 in their fillings.
That theory would have more weight if Radio 2 had been around back then.
It was.
Wow.
He got a weirdly worded patent for his method of wireless telegraphy in 1872. It seems to be more about harnessing atmospheric energy, not so much about actually communicating through the air. So, you know, he didn't quite understand the things that he was experiencing in his experiments.
Did he, like, patent the force? Is that kind of what just happened there?
Well, sort of.
Wow.
Well, he was practicing a method.
I thought Yoda did that.
It was like he was pulling electricity from the air or something.
Yeah, exactly. He patented the Force.
Wow.
Someone should sue George Lucas.
I think so.
Yeah, they should.
His estate.
They should do that anyway.
Yeah.
He tried to get support and funding for his experiments from US Congress, partially succeeded, but was ridiculed by everyone who thought he was a crank and a fool. He knew this, and in his later years, he went on one of these dramatic speeches about, oh, you know, someday I'll be vindicated, someday the world will recognize what I've been doing, and I'll be proved right. And everyone thought,
well, he was proved right, but I don't think the world recognizes him for it, really.
Well, we're doing that now. We recognize you, Malon Loomis. Even if we can't pronounce your name, we recognize you, and that's the greatest honor you could hope for.
Indeed.
Wikipedia recognizes you, too. You should be very proud.
Wikipedia recognizes practically everyone, though.
It does. It probably recognizes anime characters more than it recognizes him. But, you know, nothing wrong with that.
Nope.
Bet they're cuter than him.
I don't know what he's like, but his name brings to mind a sort of like Harry Potter character or
kind
something.
Of moonish person.
I don't know.
With Loomis and all that.
Anyway, Thomas Edison also did some experiments and noticed what he called an etheric force.
Thomas Edison would do that.
So he didn't know what the hell it was either.
Ooh.
And he was ridiculed for it. But that was also electromagnetic waves, we know now. So everyone who talked about these things was pretty much ignored by the mainstream science world, it seems, including David E. Hughes. In 1878, he did some experiments involving transmitting and receiving radio waves, but his work was not sufficiently scientific or provable for people to take much notice of him. David E. Hughes also was the co-inventor of the microphone, I am told.
Really.
Maybe they should have listened to him.
Actually what we're talking into.
I know.
Right now.
So thank you, David E. Hughes.
Yes,
so
thank you.
So what happened to his collaborator, Mike Rowe? Sorry. You have to cut out everything I say into my technical bit.
Do you know what's kind of sad?
What?
We're appreciating radio, but really we've kind of... Well, it's like we're going out on the internet, so we're kind of like... Against radio.
Well, no. I'll get to my thoughts on that later.
Sorry.
I don't entirely agree with that. Maybe I'll get to them now, actually.
No.
I think I will. You've made a segue into that.
You've made a point.
Because, you know, you might say that we're going against radio, but really radio is two different things. It's the method by which information is transmitted through the air, and it's the sort of spoken word or, you know, audio-based entertainment. And both those things are still going to be around in, like, 100 years, but they're probably not necessarily going to be together. But I don't think they need to be.
No. Well, actually, the thing is, when I download this podcast to listen to it, it's actually going to, on the last distance into my computer, it's going to be transmitted through the air from my wireless router to my computer, using
possibly
the same similar sort of technology.
Possibly somewhere else along the way as well.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, all these networks throughout that connect the world now, they have points in them where it's wireless.
Yes.
So, you know, radio isn't really going anywhere. It's just
changing, though.
Yeah.
But the same can't really be said about television, because, like, you could say that, like, if you're watching it online, is it a film or is it TV? Or is it just... something different, who knows?
My head.
You could say, though, I mean, that radio was the precursor to everything else.
Well, yes. Yeah.
It was a start of really kind of entertainment and trying to get to an audience that wasn't right in front of you.
Yeah.
That's
you
true,
could say
yes.
That. Although, I mean, you could say that books were that, but who cares about books?
Not books.
I mean, television is transmitted via what is basically radio.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Anyway, back to the timeline for a while. Oh God, this guy.
Not that guy.
God?
No.
Well, God might be involved.
He was a clever bloke. Maybe he was God. Themistocles Calzeschi Onesti.
Wow, I'm jealous of his name.
Italian dude invents a primitive device for picking up radio waves called a coherer tube, which is filled with iron filings and will later be developed into a proper radio receiver, but not by him. That was in 1884.
So he started it, and someone really finished it off.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, he came up with the original technology, but it was much improved upon later. James Clerk Maxwell is finally vindicated in 1887 when Heinrich Hertz makes sparks jump across a gap in a wire loop using radio waves. And you may recognise Hertz's name, because he also has a unit of measurement named after him.
I recognised it.
Well done. Which is it's a measurement of frequency. In fact, if we look at the thing we're recording on now, it says 44,100 hertz.
Yes.
Which is CD quality sound.
Cool. So the guy who was vindicated, he's probably happy if he was alive.
I don't know if he was alive. Maybe he was. I imagine if he was alive, then he would be happy. If he wasn't, then he wouldn't probably feel anything, really.
Probably be saying, I told you so.
Yeah. Probably, but I don't think anyone would take any notice of him.
No.
At least he wasn't alive to see the building they named after him.
So, Hertz's findings were published the next year, 1888, and people started to take the idea more seriously.
Yay.
Which was nice.
For once.
In 1890, Edward Branly makes an improved coherer tube. And I don't have any information on that, but I thought I should mention Edward Branly, because he probably deserves it.
Probably.
Now, Tesla.
He'll be good, Tesla.
Nikola Tesla, who is a man.
Oh. It's all men.
Yeah.
Wow.
It seems to be quite a male-dominated field. It's
radio.
Electronic stuff still is, isn't it, James? There weren't many girls on
even
your course.
Even if there were women probably doing it, no one probably listened to them.
That's possible, yeah.
Back in those days.
Yeah.
Less so than the people that were, the men that were listening to.
We here at Encyclopod are more enlightened than that.
Yep.
Even which though we're all men right
which
now.
Which is why we sometimes have a girl on this podcast.
Only but one.
Not today.
Not no. today.
She's busy with her boyfriend, who's having a birthday or something.
Any excuse. Waited 10 months.
Women.
Yeah. Anyway, what was I saying about Tesla? He did experiments with electricity, which basically brought together all the elements needed for radio transmissions.
Hooray.
And he gives a public demonstration to the Franklin Institute in Philadelphia.
Cool.
Wow. The world really takes notice now. In 1894, Oliver Lodge, who you might have heard of.
Did he invent the Lodge?
Yes.
Hooray!
I don't know if he did, really. Probably not.
Damn.
What he did do was publicly demonstrate another and even more improved coherer with his added trembler. Do you know what a trembler is, James?
No.
I don't really know what it is.
I know what it is on an electric bell, but I've never heard of one on the radio.
Apparently it was to dislodge metal filings that ended up clumped together.
You think that'd be a dislodger, not a trembler?
Well, I assume it trembled in order to do that.
Yeah.
So that they would, like, fall apart from each other.
But he could...
Which made it...
He could have called it a dislodger, then he could have put his name to it, in a sense.
Oh, yeah!
The fool!
Wow. That's clever. You're clever.
Mm-hmm.
I knew we had you on this for a reason. Anyway, he transmitted Morse code and radio waves from one building at the Oxford University Museum of Natural History to another. And, you know, these public displays were seeming to get quite popular.
What did he say
via Morse code?
Beep, 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 beep. I don't know.
Beep, 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 beep.
Something like that. Yeah, I'm going to say it was that.
Poor Morse code. Before the radio, it was so popular, and then...
Okay, now, oh god, I shouldn't be making fun of people. I'm not making fun of people's names, I'm just distressed by my own inability to pronounce them because I'm, like, so British and incompetent. Jagadish Chandra Bose.
Where is he from?
That's my best guess.
Or she.
For how to... He is a he, and...
Of course.
He is from... Come on, Wikipedia, come on. India.
Oh, he's a sir. He got a knighthood.
Oh, yeah. That's nice. He did another public demonstration of the use of electromagnetic waves, over a distance of nearly a mile, apparently. But
he didn't place to demonstrate.
He didn't boringly transmit Morse code. He used these signals to ignite gunpowder and ring a bell.
In that order.
Ring a bell.
Apparently. I would have thought he would finish with the gunpowder.
He's like, and now for my grand finale after blasting the top of this mountain, I will ring this bell.
And the climber.
Oh, see, I thought that the gunpowder was like, it led to the bell.
Oh,
somehow.
Oh, like a big, like, Rube Goldberg.
Yeah.
That would be great.
That would be.
How does that work, though?
What do you mean?
Well, how does he use, like, the radio things to make the dynamite go?
Presumably you'd use the electric current from the receiver to ignite the gunpowder somehow.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, well, there are lots of electrical circuits in place already by that time. I mean, people had been experimenting with them for a while. It was that last, well, it's not the last step in science, obviously, but, you know, the step of being able to transmit signals, you know, basically continue a circuit through the air, through thin air, is like what people were working on now. And now we come to possibly the most famous radio related person. He finally got his sorry behind in gear and showed up on the scene, and he's another Italian with a hard to pronounce name. I think it's Giuliano Marconi. Does that sound right, James? Giuliano?
Roughly. I don't know exactly.
Looks like Guglielmo, but...
Guglielmo?
That's how
is that like a special tickly Elmo?
I would
or a really ugly Elmo?
I'm ugly Elmo!
Well, that was the first transmission here.
I'm sorry, Marconi. Actually, I'm not sorry. You know why I'm not sorry, Marconi? You know why I'm not sorry? Because after you did all your radio stuff, this is jumping ahead a bit, but it's nothing to do with the radio stuff, you got really into fascism and joined Mussolini's fascist grand council. That's why I'm not sorry, Marconi.
You bastard.
You guggly Elmo, you.
Beep that out as well.
Oh, no, I can keep that word in.
Oh, cool.
Anyway, back to
bastard,
when he
bastard.
Wasn't a fascist.
As long as it's a fascist, it's a bastard.
Okay, back to when he wasn't a fascist. He was just an inventor. He, in 1895, Marconi sends wireless signals either 1.5 kilometers or 1.5 miles. No one cares, apparently. Because someone had already done it anyway. I don't know why we're mentioning that. Anyway, 1895 was also the year that the first radio antennae, or aerials, are independently invented by both... Marconi and another guy whose name is Alexander Stepanovich Popov, a Russian guy.
Who is more credited for it, though?
I don't know. Well, Marconi gets most of the credit for the invention of radio, would you say, James?
I think so, yeah.
And the aerial.
Yeah, but, I mean, as we'll see in a minute, it can be widely disputed, and it is widely disputed who invented radio, because there's so many stages in the invention of radio. You can't really know for sure. In 1896, Marconi got a patent for a system of telegraphy using Hertzian waves. Interestingly, Marconi's patents were later invalidated in 1943 by the US Supreme Court because they said that Tesla had done it before. So Tesla got the credit after that, but I'm not sure about the other countries. That was just in the US. In 1896, Heinrich Hertz... in Morse code was transmitted by Alexander Stepanovich Popov, which was nice. Hertz,
you mean
got
him
or
his name?
Just his name.
Okay.
Wow, that'd be like
it wasn't like
Willy
Charlie
Wonka.
And the Chocolate Factory. We always talk about Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
We have to bring it round to that somehow.
Will we ever have an encyclopedia about Willy Wonka?
We had one on chocolate. That's probably the closest we're going to get.
Oh.
Until we run out of other subjects, which we nearly have.
Do
what
well
else is there to talk about?
It's about eight things, and then it's like Charlie and the Chocolate
Factory.
Yeah,
and it's like...
that's all that's left.
Fluff and Skittles and stuff. 1897, Marconi continues his march of, like, taking all the credit for the invention of radio by establishing the world's first radio station on the Isle of Wight, apparently.
Wow.
Which you wouldn't think would be the site of the world's first radio station, would you?
Best place to get an audience, but...
Well, I mean, I think it broadcast to... No, actually, it didn't broadcast. I think that's the thing.
It sucks as a radio station.
I think it was just trying to transmit to individuals. It was like an experimental place. It wasn't like he was playing the top 40 or anything out of it.
Well, the top 40 of that time would be hilarious.
You don't make fun of Victorian music.
Of course not.
Not that I know anything about it at all.
Don't think anyone does now.
Hey, and then Marconi the next year, 1898, opened the world's first wireless factory in Chelmsford, employing around 50 people.
Where's Chelmsford, wow, for people that don't know where Chelmsford is?
I think it's in England, isn't it?
Down south, probably somewhere.
Somewhere.
Down there, highly.
Getting away from that Marconi guy. Also in that year, first adjustable radio tuning coils are patented by Oliver Lodge.
Wow.
You know what that means, James, don't you?
Speeding up, yes, the inventions.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a snowball, this invention thing. People are just like, woo. It goes insane after a while. Like the internet,
yeah,
at the beginning of, well, the end of the 20th and beginning of the 21st. It just got crazy.
Exponentially.
Yeah, that's a good word.
Adjustable tuning coils. I guess those would be the first coils that were able to pick up, you know, a different
multiple
station depending
frequencies
on whether you,
yeah,
well, not different station if there was only one or something.
Well, I don't know if there were any stations back. There weren't any stations really back
no
then. Okay, now we come to a sort of weird bit of radio history. 1900 seems to be indisputably the date of the first voice transmission via radio. But who did it?
Who done it?
Apparently, in June, a voice radio broadcast was made by a Brazilian priest called Father Roberto Landel de Moura, supposedly over a distance of 8 kilometers. And if that is indeed true, which somewhere on the internet says it is, so you know,
it must be then.
Pretty much. And then he was the first person to successfully transmit voice wirelessly, and is a bit of an unsung hero because
he just spoke.
What?
Sorry.
Because in December of 1900,
I just got that. Oh dear.
In December of 1900, this is the first thing that seems to be widely considered the first voice transmission via radio, made by the Canadian guy Reginald Aubrey Fessenden, over a distance of only about a mile. So that's the one that everyone talks about as the first radio voice transmission. But Father Roberto Landel de Moura might have something to say about that.
If he could.
Well, yeah. Considering he was broadcasting in 1900, I think he's dead now. But, you know, I think if that's true, then we need to recognise him more. Now it gets really exciting here. As Gavin's expression conveys.
I'm very tired, I'm sorry.
Don't worry, we'll ignore you.
Gavin wasn't going to be on this episode, by the way. He just sort of...
I'm just like a sitting guest. I'm learning.
That's good.
Good, he's a student.
Hope you're remembering all these dates that I'm saying.
Yeah, 18...
something.
Blah, blah.
1901. The first transatlantic radio transmission.
Turn of the century.
Sent from Cornwall to Marconi in Newfoundland. It was the letter S in Morse code. Anyone know what that is?
S is dot, dot, dot.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And Marconi claims that he received it because he was stationed there. But this is disputed because, you know, you can't trust that Marconi geezer.
No. Fascist?
Yeah.
I bet it was a letter L. He's like, no, it was an S. Seriously, guys. Like, no, it was an L.
Yep.
Yeah, probably. 1906 was the supposed first radio broadcast, although the Father Roberto Landel de Moura also claimed to have broadcast in 1900. So that's also disputed. But in 1906, the supposedly first one was made by Reginald Aubrey Fessenden, who broadcast from Massachusetts on Christmas Eve, using a synchronous rotary spark transmitter, no less.
Aww.
And passing ships heard him playing O Holy Night on the violin and reading from the Bible.
How nice.
How many ships?
Delightful.
On Christmas Eve in the evening.
Oh, that's sort of sweet somehow.
Yeah.
1906. This will mean something to James. I don't know about the rest of us. First triode valve was invented by Lee DeForest. Wow. Oh, my God.
Dear God.
But apparently the first triode valve was the first device capable of amplifying a weak electric signal. Was it? Or was
yes.
it?
Yes.
Okay.
A good. Weak one. No.
And even now, in 2009, certain mixes still can't do it. So it was quite the chief.
1909 is when Charles David Herald supposedly created the world's first radio broadcasting station, as opposed to Marconi's one, which was just like an experimental thing, in San Jose, California. Now, Charles David Herald was also the person to coin the term broadcasting. And he also had another term called narrowcasting. Which
oh, yeah.
Meant,
it made sense.
Any guesses?
To one person?
Yes. Well done.
Hooray.
A transmission intended to be picked up only by one receiver.
Do I get any points?
Yes. You get, 20 encyclopoints. Points.
I like that. Can I have some?
Yeah, you can have 5.
Oh, thank you. Get any...
Oh, sorry. Okay. In 1912, what big event happened that shook the world? The sinking of the Titanic happened. Yes, I don't know how to finish
an eloquent
that
way of saying it.
Yeah. And this led to radios becoming standard on large ships because people wanted like ways to communicate with other ships so that horrible disasters wouldn't happen.
Didn't crash into icebergs.
Oh, that would probably help with that. But also so that people could send out signals for rescue or whatever.
SOS.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That actually sounds a bit like the text sound.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe someone, somewhere, needs our help.
Possibly.
Encyclopod, to the rescue!
No, we can't be bothered.
It's a text well, sound voice code for SMS.
Oh yeah, I think it is, actually. Oh, wow.
That would make sense.
Assuming M is 2 dashes.
I think it is.
I'm going to go check that now. We're very committed to your education here at Encyclopod.
No, it has to be. It has to be.
Yes,
it is.
That's right. Yep.
Wow.
So we've learned something today.
We have. Never mind all this radio stuff.
Never mind.
Let's talk about the sound that texts make when they come through. No, 1913 is another date that James has tattooed on his arm because. It was when the first regenerative / feedback circuit was invented.
Quite a small
tattoo. Oh, yes, yes, of course, of course.
Similar to the triode valve, but increasing radio sensitivity by a lot more. And we have Edwin Howard Armstrong to thank for that.
Thank you.
Thank
Let's
you,
give him some encyclopoints.
Armstrong. Yeah, you get 2 encyclopoints for that. Well
Yay.
Done, Edwin. In 1917, another... amazing date. The super heterodyne circuit was invented. And I think we all know what that means.
It's straight.
yeah.
I don't think even I know what that means.
Apparently, it allows us to make variable frequency receivers. Oh, I thought that already happened.
Wow.
But, you know.
It's super straight.
It means something to someone.
Surely if it's variable,
maybe
it's not.
Maybe it's a variable capacitor.
But
type.
I just said it was super hetero.
Hetero means different, though.
Yeah.
So, oh, yeah. Right, yes, of course.
So, you know, it means presumably you can pick up different frequencies on the same
yes.
thing. And all that was also Edwin Howard Armstrong. So you get 3 more encyclopoints. Oh, and you... Oh, wow, you also did it while serving in the U.S. Army Signal Corps in the First World War.
Well, that deserves a few.
Oh, maybe. I don't know much about the First World War, so maybe he was... Maybe that was great of him to do... So, I don't know. We'll come back to the encyclopoints for him once we decide whether the First World War was morally justifiable or not. We'll get back to you on that.
Surely we shouldn't blame him, though.
It's his fault. If there hadn't been a radio, no one would be able to say, let's have a war.
Ooh, yeah. True. All right, fine. Negative encyclopoints.
Super head of a dying circuit. Responsible for millions of deaths.
Yeah, certainly was. Oh God, not another one, Armstrong. In 1921, he invented the super regenerative circuit. What?
He can't be stopped.
Is that another amplification thing?
I assume so, because Yeah, the regenerative circuit was.
Yeah.
I assume the super one is just like that, but it's to the regenerative circuit and what Superman is to man.
Like what the regenerative circuit is after it's eaten a mushroom.
Wow. In Mario World.
Super regenerative circuit, brothers. Plunging on with the timeline is what we're doing now. In the 1920s, at some point, people managed to transmit moving pictures via radio. Can
That's
anyone tell
crazy.
Me what that is called?
The picture mobile.
Yeah. The picture mobile, that's it.
That's it. Also, colloquially known as television.
Can you tell me who did it?
Who done it?
I've forgotten, no. Can you
that
tell me?
That beard guy, Logie Beard.
I don't think it was.
This was one system. It was a mechanical system.
I've completely
system,
forgotten.
But
really
I, think,
bad
I don't know.
I think Marconi had this an electronic system.
Look, screw the Italian. The Scottish guy should get it.
No, don't... Oh, God. You're worse than Timmy.
Yes, I am.
No, I think he should be screwed, not because he's Italian, but because he was a fascist.
Fascist.
Yes.
Anyway, that was at some point during the 1920s, but we're not going to talk about television because this is not the television podcast.
Mm-mm.
We'll do another one of them at some point.
In
1930, Edwin Howard Armstrong filed a patent for the first FM system that wasn't granted until 1933.
That's right, it's on my
notes. We'll do a bit on the difference between AM and FM in a minute. In 1947, this is the date tattooed in huge letters on James at some place we won't name. The transistor was invented by William Shockley, John Bardeen, and Walter Brattain. The transistor isn't just useful for radios, but for all electronics. And it won them the 1956 Nobel Prize for Physics. Well done, them.
Good.
It was quickly put to use. In 1955, the first transistor radio, the TR-1, was marketed by Regency Electronics in the USA. It was also a pocket radio. Exciting thing. 1962, a big radio event. Telstar 1... The first radio communication satellite was launched. Basically, it looks like a crazy sphere covered in solar cells.
Wow.
Oh.
Like a disco ball up in the sky.
Or a Death Star.
Sort of, yeah. Like a cross between the Death Star and a disco ball.
I prefer the disco ball myself.
You could call it the Disco Star or the Death Ball.
I'm assuming it would be playing disco music
or
at death some point.
Skull.
Yeah, but in the 60s it probably
death
possibly.
Skull. That's like, that would be a good genre of music. Death Skull. Like... cross between death metal and disco. Mm.
And ska.
Someone's got someone must have done it by now. And that Telstar 1 was able to relay TV pictures, telephone calls and fax images through space, and it provided the first transatlantic television feed.
Wow.
Also in the 1960s, US long distance telephone networks began using digital radios to link certain points on their network. So if you called somewhere from somewhere else, then it's quite likely that somewhere along the way the information would be going through the air rather than along a wire.
Somewhere,
yes, although you don't know. And we're getting quite modern now, because the next date I have is 1997.
When the Spice Girls came on the radio.
When I was alive.
Yep, that's the date that I have important. Here. Spice Girls came on. Actually, I think it was 1996.
No, that was 96, actually.
I believe that's the beginning of the decline of radio.
I bow to James's knowledge of Spice Girls.
Quite right. That's what most of these notes are about.
But more minor news, 1997 was the year that BBC started... the first scheduled digital audio broadcasting. Or DAB.
Beforehand it was really random. Beforehand it was random.
Yeah, they just thought DAB on when they felt like it. But
yeah.
You never knew when they were going to do it, those crazy BBC.
Crazy. Maniacs at the time.
Yeah, they are still maniacs. Yep.
All these people sitting with their DAB radios on, but... just tuned
just
in with
waiting.
Silence, and then suddenly you hear Michael Burke saying, "Hello, ha ha ha!
Now we're going again. We're not going to tell you when we'll be back. We will when you least expect it."
Terrifying. terrifying.
I'd listen to that.
Yeah.
I'd actually... Can I tell you a random story that's completely a Gavinism when he should have tried?
Right. In my room at the moment, there's a cable which runs from where my computer once was, but isn't because it's at the halls at the moment, to under my bed where I used to have speakers so that I could listen to music up in bed. So what I was thinking of doing was getting it to run actually from where my computer was, so that when I come back, there's one lead there, to the bathroom where we have speakers, right, for an iPod thing. But I was thinking, if I plug it in and always have it, and then sometimes leave it on when people go in, I could have a microphone and just, when they're on the toilet, just, hello! Or, you know, play them a song. Because no one will notice it's on. It won't have an iPod on it.
It's like your radio station.
And this toilet will self-destruct in 5 seconds.
And you know, they're in a, there's no better place to be if they're going to crap themselves either.
Very true.
So, I could just whisper something sweetly. You know.
You could, yeah.
Oh my.
You to really freak them out.
Or you could like, help, I'm in the toilet.
No, anyway. Don't do that!
So that would be similar to this scary BBC DAB that you were talking about. Apart from a bit more evil.
Yeah.
But I've warned you guys now, and the other people are likely to listen to this. So we're just going to have to do it complete strangers.
No one's going to listen to this, don't worry.
Don't worry.
Okay, so that's the end of the invention part I have on the timeline, although I do have a separate short timeline for commercial radio.
Cool.
It just talks about the first time various things happened, basically. 1920s to 1950s were referred to as the golden age of radio, at least in America, and the vast majority of Americans were regular radio listeners. Instead of huddling around the TV, they would huddle around the radio, and, you know, the family would tune in and listen to their favorite shows. And this only changed when TV came along, and they could be antisocial in a new and exciting way.
Hey, radio... Oh, sorry, I thought you were about to say antisocial. Radio was quite antisocial.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry.
In 1920 were a few important dates. First, broadcast news. Thank you, Station 8MK, Detroit. The first college radio station at Union College, Schenectady, New York. The first public entertainment broadcast in the US by 2ADD... A series of Thursday night concerts.
Wow. No one really thought of their names well, did they?
No, they're not very catchy names in those days.
Nope.
They've definitely got better at the marketing side of radio.
Radio 1. That's a good name.
You know what? Well, you don't really know what you're getting with that, do you?
Nope.
And that broadcast expanded its range over time from about 100 miles to about 1,000 miles, so... Certainly come a long way from the in-the-same-room sort of experiments that the early pioneers did.
Quite literally.
Yep. First spoken weather forecast was the University of Wisconsin in 1921.
I wonder who actually came up with thinking about saying the weather on the radio. I mean, they really must have been... They couldn't have come up with anything else, so let's talk about the weather.
Well, they're not just saying, oh, it's a nice day outside today. It's a forecast. Yeah.
No, but still, you wonder how someone actually thought of, let's actually talk about it.
What, well,
do you? Really?
I'm assuming it was part of, like, the printed news.
Probably.
Just
possibly.
To broadcast it.
Maybe.
Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah, probably.
Wow.
Is it still part of the printed news? Can you actually look at the weather?
I think so.
It's been a while since I've read a newspaper.
They'll do pictures of it or something.
Marconi Research Centre at Ripple, England, commences regular entertainment broadcasts in 1922. 1926 was the first broadcast of the BBC's very famous shipping forecast, which a lot of people are completely obsessed with. Does anyone know why? Because, I mean, people just go on and on about how...
The shipping forecast?
How they have this sort of affection for it. It's
really?
Basically a weather forecast for ships.
Yeah. As in weather at the sea, or like,
weather
as in a
at
forecast
the sea and you know, to help ships. You know,
I guess it's like saving lives.
It has this sort of reputation as being this, like almost an institution in itself. The shipping forecast. I don't know why. Some people just find it soothing to listen to. I guess. The first radio soaps appeared. Sorry, I don't know what the hell Ewan just did then. He has the weirdest way of eating a donut I've ever seen. if you could see this. First radio soaps appeared in 1932 on NBC, which I guess was a radio network before it was a TV network. It is a TV network, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, Betty and Bob and One Man's Family. And the same year...
Betty and Bob.
The BBC World Service launches, which broadcasts to places all over the globe.
Did you know that Orson Welles was on that? He used to report in India.
Wow.
He was part of, he was broadcasting propaganda to make everyone there think everything was
really
fine.
Oh, Orson Welles was?
Yeah.
I'm disappointed in him.
Yeah.
No, he didn't like it, and he resigned.
Okay. Oh, well, that's good. Good on you, Orson.
Good for you, Orson Welles.
And talking of Orson Welles, he's actually on the next thing in my timeline. You know what happened in 1938 involving Orson Welles?
What?
Very famous radio incident.
Really?
War of the Worlds.
Yes.
Wow.
War of the Worlds was broadcast at Halloween 1938.
Cool.
It was Orson Welles' adaptation of H.G. Wells' story, which is strange to Welles's.
The Wells.
Unrelated,
well, well,
though.
Well.
Yeah. If there was a third one, that would be
it was
a
well combed. I'm not good at all.
It wasn't really, because people listening thought it was a real news bulletin, because it was in the format of a news bulletin, some of it. So there was
potentially the fact that Orson Welles had been a broadcaster prior to this. They might have thought, I know that voice. This must be real.
Oh dear.
Well, yes, it caused widespread panic. There's some debate as to how widespread the panic really was, whether it was blown out of proportion by the media. The print media may have disapproved of the new radio stuff that was going on at that time, so they might have blown it a bit out of proportion, but...
That would never happen. Who are you kidding?
Yeah.
The news media, the print media, No!
No.
But certainly, according to some reports, over 1 million people thought it was real. You know... That's quite impressive. It shows the power of radio, at least.
The public are ignorant? Dear God.
I'm not saying that. I don't want to say that.
Good. At that time.
And basically all the rest is just the first time that various shows were broadcast on radio. They're basically just shows that I've heard of, so I thought I would mention them, because they must be the most important shows if I've heard of them and like them. 1942, Desert Island Discs. 1951, The Archers, which was the longest-running radio show,
and
still is going, I think.
Is it? I thought...
Maybe it's not. It was a few years ago, at least.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember if it is now. The Goon Show was in 1951, although it was called Crazy People, to start with. And my favourite radio show, possibly, was Just a Minute, which started in 1967. And that's the end of my timeline. Woohoo!
Hooray! Did people think they were real?
Just a minute.
Well, all those shows that you mentioned.
Thought the world would explode if
you
didn't
keep going.
Well,
people used to live to... We spoke about The Archers when we were studying soaps. And people used to listen as families. And apparently people were mortified when... I think it was... I can't remember her name, but the mother... Mummy Archer, whatever her name was,
Mummy
was
Archer,
killed off.
Yeah.
Apparently they still killed. Even now every year on that date, because obviously it's still the same family, sometimes there's references to that character.
Wow.
To commemorate her death.
Gosh, that's lovely. Quite touching, isn't it?
Yeah.
I have a few honourable mentions before we finish up this timeline.
You better do it
honourably. Because there are people that did stuff to do with radio, but I couldn't understand what it was talking about, and it didn't seem like they were necessarily the first people. They were just clever people who helped with the invention of radio. Nathan Stubblefield, shout out to you, my homie. Ernest Rutherford, yay.
Oh, he was famous.
Was he?
Yeah. I think so, I heard.
Yeah, okay.
I think he was the one who discovered atoms have a nucleus and aren't just solid.
Wow.
Well, you deserve some encyclopedias for that, even disregarding your radio contributions. And Giulio Cervera Baviera.
Boo.
What?
I don't know.
You don't know who he is, do you?
He's Italian.
No encyclopedia.
It sounds.
I'm going to give him some encyclopedias.
For what?
To make up for the horrible racism of you and...
I guess that's a good enough point.
Yep. And that's all from the timeline of radio.
Yay.
Thank God.
Time
took long enough. But we still have some more stuff to talk about, but maybe we'll take one of them breaks beforehand so that we can get food and batteries for a little thing that's coming up. Stay tuned.
All we hear is breaking the glass.
You're not
going to
put this in, are you?
Gavin, you're on Encyclopod. Say something.
I'm on the radio.
That's right, you're on the radio. How are you communicating with us now, Gavin?
By a walkie-talkie.
On a walkie-talkie, that's right. Well done. How is it out there in the outside world?
It's a little weird, because there's a lot of blue light inside, but the
can you speak any louder?
I can try, but I don't want to waste people.
That's true, actually, yeah. Well, hopefully I can get this volume up loud enough so that people can hear you.
And also there's a lot of old people still around here. I don't want to waste them. They're old.
Okay, maybe you should come in now, then.
Okay, I'm on my way.
Yay. Wow, that was exciting.
That was a great segment.
That was a fantastic segment worth going out and buying batteries for.
Indeed it was.
Yes.
Phantasmic.
Phantasmic indeed. Don't want to know what that's a cross between.
Me neither. I'm just thinking.
Oh, and Gavin's back in the house.
Hooray!
The house. Hola!
Oh, okay. How is it out there in the real world?
It's actually kind of nice. It's not too cold, not too hot.
It's too hot in here.
Just slightly cloudy.
It's nice to get a bit fresh air, actually. Mm.
Yeah. Good. Well, that may have seemed a pointless segment.
It kind of was,
but it wasn't.
Yep. But it was arguably not entirely pointless, because what you were hearing there, James, can you explain what that has to do with radio?
As well as everything else with radio.
Well, Alex, actually, what we were hearing there was being transmitted via radio waves, I think. Probably shortwave radio waves. In the same sort of way that commercial radio stations broadcast what we've been talking about.
Interesting.
So in fact, we had some real radio on a radio podcast.
Yeah.
Which is good.
So these walkie-talkies that we have here, just store-bought ones, they're actually doing pretty much the same thing that all those early pioneers of radio like Oliver Lodge and Marconi and people were trying to do back in the olden days.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, they're a complete radio transmitter and receiver in the little box. They have all the same elements. I mean, you can see the aerials on them. Well, you listeners at home can't, obviously, but
I'll
we can.
I'll put a picture up.
And then there's the microphone and speaker, and the other bits are hidden inside, but they'll be the same as what an actual radio station would use on a smaller scale.
Well, why don't we talk a wee bit about what those things are? Because that's the bit that I really don't know all that much about. But you, as a person who's studied electronics, will probably have a clearer idea of what each component does.
Well, I can tell you a bit about that. Yeah, yeah. So, first on the transmitting side, I guess. Well, first of all, you need a source of the sound. I mean, often that would be a microphone if someone's just talking on the radio, which it was in the early stages. And obviously now they often play music as well, so that source might be a CD player or a computer or something. But anyway, you have a source of the sound signal. So that say it's a microphone, just very simple. The microphone converts the sound into an electrical signal that's the same sort of shape as the sound initially. Mm-hmm. And then that will have to be boosted up a bit, so there'll be an amplifier, because microphones usually generate quite a weak signal. And then the most important thing that happens before the actual transmission is the sound wave gets modulated. And this
is the bit that really confuses me.
And this means it gets combined with a much higher frequency, radio frequency, in fact, wave. At the moment, it's not actually a radio wave yet. It's just another electronic signal, but it's at the frequency of that the radio wave is going to be transmitted at. I can talk a bit about the frequency spectrum and things, if you like.
Yeah, that'd be good.
As we've heard about already, radio waves are electromagnetic waves, and in fact there are lots of different types of electromagnetic waves, and they're all quite similar really, except they don't seem similar in the way they behave, but actually they're all the same basic thing. what really sets them apart from each other mostly is the frequency. And the frequency is, if you can imagine seeing the waves coming at you or coming past you or something, the frequency is the number of peaks that would pass you in 1 second, and that's measured in hertz.
Yay, hertz!
Yes.
Yay.
As well as the frequency, you can also talk about it in terms of wavelength. And the wavelength is sort of the... In a way, it's sort of the inverse of the frequency.
Oh, God.
A higher frequency wave has a shorter wavelength. Because if you imagine, if you've got lots and lots of waves coming past you, there'll be quite little waves. So there won't be very much space between the peaks. So it's usually... I suppose the frequency is a more normal way to talk about them. That's the numbers you usually see on a radio transmitter. Like I said, there are lots of different things electromagnetic waves. Radio waves, in fact, are the lowest frequencies of electromagnetic waves. And does anyone know what other things are electromagnetic waves as
I
well?
I do, but I can't remember the order.
Well,
can I just shout them out and
I
then
have
you
them
can
here.
Reorder
that,
them?
That thing okay. In the Matrix, the electromagnetic pulse.
Okay, how about we...
I think that is one.
Yeah.
Hooray!
The Matrix is actually on there itself, you know, the green scrolling text, of course. But
yeah.
Okay. Can I just name some?
Yeah.
Ultraviolet.
Yes.
And then there's the visible spectrum.
Yes, visible light.
Infrared.
Waves, yes.
Radio, as you mentioned.
Yes.
X-ray.
Yes.
Gamma ray.
Yes. There's one more.
Ultraray.
Microwaves.
Yes,
oh,
microwaves.
Damn.
Yay.
Okay, so
how does it go from top to bottom?
Can I try?
You could try, yes.
Well, I don't know which way is which, but gamma.
Gamma's the highest frequency. Then X-rays.
Ultraviolet.
Yes.
Then violet. Blue,
visible lights of various
so far
colors,
back to
yes.
Red, infrared,
yes.
Microwaves,
yes.
Radio waves.
Yes,
yay!
That's right.
Wow.
So radio waves have the lowest frequency of the electromagnetic waves, and well, the different ones have different properties depending on the frequencies and different uses. I mean,
aren't like some of them like damaging or
yes.
Something?
Yes. Well, the ones that are higher frequency than visible light, that's the UV, X-rays, and gamma rays are quite dangerous because they actually have enough energy to knock electrons off atoms, which
ouch.
Means they can cause damage to DNA.
That's
and things
gotta
and
hurt.
Cause damage, cause cancer and things
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, it made
so
Bruce Banner the Hulk.
Oh,
a bit
well,
kind of
they've got beneficial
wow.
Yeah.
properties.
They're not all bad.
No,
I thought microwaves are also kind of bad.
You want to be a superhero, these low-frequency waves are the way to go. Or is it high-frequency?
High-frequency.
Radio waves wouldn't make you a superhero.
Radio
probably.
Waves and microwaves and visible light aren't dangerous, at least not in the same way. And though I'm really... Well, microwaves, people used to think they might be dangerous in some way, but it seems, from what I've read anyway, most scientists these days think they're not actually harmful unless there's enough of them to... Well,
cook
literally
you.
Cook you, in
wow.
fact. Because they are what cooks food in a microwave oven. But they're also what carries mobile phone signals and
all right.
wireless internet signals.
Oh, really?
And things.
I thought those
yes.
were radio waves.
I don't think there's a sort of definite divide between them. I mean, microwaves are just a little bit up the spectrum, really, from
okay.
radio waves. But I think wireless internet is technically
oh,
microwave
I see.
Range
right.
as well.
Okay.
And within the radio band, there's different frequency bands in there as well. I mean, like, for example, there's long wave, medium wave, and short wave you might see on your radio set, and they correspond to different bands of frequencies, different wavelengths. And then TV signals are actually transmitted as radio waves as well, and they're at a higher frequency than the radio signals usually. One thing that's important is how you stop the stations from conflicting with each other or interfering with each other.
Yeah, I really don't understand that. I see the world as like, I mean, it must be so full of all these different signals.
Yes,
that are all
it
different.
Is.
And you know, there must be so many frequencies because
there are.
How do they not just get jumbled up sometimes?
Well, they do really. I mean, I'll try and explain it. If you have signals of different frequencies, then you can unjumble them. You can filter out the one you're interested in by sort of basically throwing away all the others. There's one example that you may have actually seen with your own eyes of something similar, which is, you know, those old 3D glasses, not the new polarizing ones, but the ones with a red lens and a green lens, or red and blue sometimes. Yeah. But anyway, the important thing is they're different colors, and the different colors are actually different wavelengths of light. So what those are doing is it's actually showing you two images at the same time, one for your left eye and one for your right eye. It's like two different channels, and each of the channels is in a different frequency, because the red and green light are a different frequency, and the little piece of plastic that goes in front of your eye filters out the other frequency, so you're only seeing the one that you're
just like a tuning coil
in, which is just like the tuning coil in a radio filtering out the other stations, so you're left with only the one.
See, the same is true of the new polarizing 3D ones, but it's not filtering out frequency.
It's not doing
different polarized lights.
It's doing it by polarization, but yeah, so it's the same.
I don't understand that.
Way.
It's not really.
But it's a bit more advanced.
Yes.
In fact.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, there are things that can like interfere deliberately with.
Yes.
Or not almost deliberately with radio signals, like spark gap transmitters, which were the old things that. I think it was Hertz who used the spark gap transmitter, was it?
I think the old ones weren't confined to one frequency or something. They
it was just noise all over the frequency spectrum. So it would have interfered with any radio signals if there'd been any back then. You know, and there's like signal jamming is something that people can do if they feel like being mischievous.
Yes.
And jamming the whole radio, the whole airwaves with nonsense or whatever.
How does that work?
And just if they have a transmitter of a certain type that doesn't care what frequency it's transmitting on, so it just like jumps all over the place.
Yeah.
It's just a chaotic signal that will transmit on all frequencies, basically.
Yeah. So you can't plan to do a certain frequency to destroy a certain radio program.
You could try. You could, yeah.
Radio terrorism. Cool.
Well, that's sort of related
to terrorism.
That's sort of related to pirate radio, which I have a bit about. I don't have very much about it, but it's basically like illegal or unregulated radio transmissions, and pirate radio. It's a very subjective term. You know, people will call something pirate radio when, I mean, no, there isn't a strict definition for it. It's just like radio that people think is shouldn't be around, or like is outside the usual channels, or against regulations. So it really only started when they started regulating the airwaves back in the day.
Ofcom.
That was like about 1912, I think, or thereabouts, when they started regulating the public airways, and I think you had to have licenses and stuff to broadcast on them if you didn't want to get into trouble. And you know, people have been violating those things ever since, and, you know, it's not every country agrees with them, so sometimes there'll be, you know, a station in one country broadcasting into another which has more strict regulations, so it can't become a political thing, and, you know, there's a sort of image of pirate radio as a sort of rebellious thing against oppressive governments or whatever.
Wasn't there
not always true, but
wasn't there a film made about it, kind of?
I'm sure there has been, yeah.
It was
sure
that one with the guy from Skins, and it had Philip Seymour Hoffman and all that. He was like the director of Love Actually was involved.
The Boat That Rocked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. They actually physically got that, like, in a pirate ship and did it.
That didn't have Nicholas Holt in it.
Did not?
No.
I mean, there have been cases of people broadcasting from ships as well. That's, I mean, that may be part of where the term pirate radio came from. Although it also refers to the sort of illegal, dodgy status of it.
Yar,
mateys. You know, that's. There's not much more to say about it. There's been a lot of examples of it in history. Some of them righteous, some of them just like broadcasting their alternative music to get away from the mainstream sort of pop stuff that they don't like, but you know.
To each his own,
indeed. Anyway, that was a bit of a tangent, sorry James.
That's okay.
How about AM versus FM? Is that
okay, yes. Well, AM stands for amplitude modulation, and these are basically ways of combining the sound signal with the radio wave signal, and amplitude modulation was the first to be done. It's very simple. In fact, it's so simple you can make a receiver without needing electricity to power it.
Wow.
Just a few components, and I think there were rumours that people even were able to pick up AM radio in their tooth fillings sometimes involuntarily. I don't know whether that's been
confirmed. Oh, is that actually true? Oh, right.
There's certainly been rumours of it. Okay. It's probably possible, because all you'd really need would be for it to be tuned into the right sort of frequency. Well, I think it would be the size and shape of their filling or whatever, whether it made the right kind of tuned circuit. Wow. It might be possible. I mean, I wouldn't rule it out anyway.
How would one discover that one's filling is picking up AM
frequencies? You'd hear it.
You'd hear it.
Okay, would it not need speakers?
No, yeah. I don't think. I don't know.
Wow,
I think.
I don't know.
Also, why would someone plug speakers into their filling?
I don't think they've made a speaker for filling.
They would. I suppose they probably wouldn't.
But I mean, I thought it was just that somehow the signal vibrated them in a certain way that would like produce those sounds.
Yeah, I think that's true.
They probably don't get very good quality.
No,
I
don't
would
think
imagine.
So.
I bet if it is true,
it was
the
dentist guy, wasn't it? He did it.
Oh yeah, of course. It all
that
comes back.
Maniac.
To that.
He invented tooth fillings that would do that. Yes, you heard it here first.
Conspiracy theories.
Yes,
indeed.
Very old-fashioned ones.
Very pirate radio.
In fact, we could move on from that, because with AM you don't get very good sound quality anyway.
So
generally.
FM's better.
Kind of. AM's very low quality generally, and susceptible to interference, and doesn't have stereo.
Why is it still used then?
Well, it doesn't use as much bandwidth as FM. It a narrower frequency band, much narrower, can be used to transmit the signal. In fact, it is still in very common use. Also, the receivers are much simpler, although as FM receivers have got smaller and cheaper, it doesn't matter so much anymore. But you still see it a lot. I mean, if you have long wave, medium wave, or short wave on your radio, that's AM. And some stations, such as Radio 5 Live, still aren't on FM because of the limited bandwidth, so they're on the AM or digital. Anyway,
But FM is varying, in order to encode a signal, it's sort of varying the frequency of the signal to transmit information, whereas AM is varying the amplitude, which is basically like volume, is it?
Yes, it is pretty much. I mean, AM varies the
amplitude. So FM would be like, say, the da, 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 da,
kind of, yeah.
But
if
an AM would be like da, 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 da,
yes, da, that's a good way of putting it, actually. I hadn't thought of how to.
I could draw the difference.
Yeah, I mean, if you see diagrams of it, you can actually see an AM wave just looks like the sound wave superimposed over the radio frequency wave, whereas the FM one, it looks more kind of, there's less
the
of a
FM
resemblance.
Ones,
they
like,
kind of
confuse me a lot.
Yeah. Anyway, this was patented in 1933. I think Alex mentioned this earlier, but it wasn't actually. Well, the BBC started to use it in 1955, so it's been around quite a while. It tends to use higher frequencies than FM. They're usually measured in megahertz, which is millions of hertz, whereas the AM ones are usually measured in kilohertz, which is thousands of hertz. And FM can do stereo. With a good signal, it's nearly CD quality, the sound. Mm. So it's much better than AM.
Nice.
Just a sort of aside, but this is to do with television rather than radio. But you know, on old analog TV, if you're getting a bit of a bad signal, the picture goes first. It could go very fuzzy and get almost completely unwatchable, but you can still make out the sound quite easily. The reason for that is the sound's transmitted as FM, but the picture's AM. Because the picture would take up far too much bandwidth if you transmitted that as FM.
Okay.
That's a sort of illustration of the difference in a way.
Okay, that's good.
And I had another thing. I had a bit about the new digital radio, if you want to hear about that. Yeah, DAB is the digital radio standard. I think it stands for digital audio broadcasting. One of the main reasons for starting it was to get better sound quality, and this is often claimed, but in fact, most of the stations in Britain at the moment are inferior quality to FM, because they use such a low bit rate, which means they don't send very much information every second, and they're using a pretty old codec. They actually use MPEG Layer 2, which is MP2.
Oh no!
And it's
a prequel to MP3, which is often used for music downloads and things. So it's actually...
So they're lying to you on these adverts when they say, oh, it's better quality and it's...
It
terrible.
Potentially could be if they used a higher bitrate.
But they won't.
And when DAB Plus comes in, it will, because they're switching to the AAC codec then. But unfortunately, everyone's going to need to buy a new radio to be able to pick it up.
So we advise you not to buy a DAB digital radio, unless you really, really want one.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I mean, it does have some advantages, like...
Well, they might turn off the old ones.
They will
turn
off the analog ones eventually. I think they're certainly going to do it for TV.
Yeah, I've been going on about that for ages.
But the thing is, the DAB stations there are a lot more of them. You can fit many more of them into the bandwidth. For example, there were over 50 of them in London already by 2001. Ooh. And that's far more than the number of analog stations. You don't have to tune them manually. They can pick up a list of all the stations and show you the names of the stations, and you can just pick out the one you want, and they can display text and things. So they do have some advantages, and when the new better codec comes in, they will be better quality than FM.
Good.
Okay, good. That's nice to know.
And also, the DAB needs even more complicated processing than FM does. You can kind of notice this if you have a digital radio or a TV, in fact, side by side with an analog one showing the same station. You wouldn't normally, but if you do, you can see a noticeable delay on the digital one, you know, probably a second or
if we have something on in the living room and the same thing's on in the dining room, and it's one's analog and the other one's like the Telewest box or whatever.
You sometimes see that in like John Lewis, if you go to the electronic department and you see loads of TVs.
But they wouldn't be selling analog ones there anymore, would they?
Probably not now. But there was one pub I used to go to where they had two TVs, and one was connected to digital and the other wasn't. And if they were on the same channel, the analog one would get it a couple of seconds before.
It's probably not a big deal.
The digital encyclopod there.
No.
But yeah, that's because digital requires so much more processing.
You need a thing to decode it and stuff. Do you know about the components in radios? And if so, can you give like a one-sentence description of each of them?
Well, I was kind of going through that, wasn't I, when we got sidetracked onto electromagnetic spectrum. Well, the transmitter, basically, you have a modulator that combines the... what's called the carrier wave. That's the actual radio frequency wave on whatever frequency the station's going to be transmitted on. It combines that with the sound wave, and however it does that depends on whether it's FM or AM. And you need something to generate the carrier wave, so that would be an oscillator probably.
Okay.
And then it would go through a pretty powerful amplifier for the combined signal, that is, would go through a pretty powerful amplifier in the case of a commercial station into the transmitter, which is like a big metal mast which actually beams the signal out into the air for people to pick up.
You say beam, but it's not necessarily a beam.
It sort of radiates in all directions. Yeah, it's not like a focused beam or anything.
And like, even that, like even your drawings, like in sections, it's not just one continuous.
It's just a continuous stream of waves sort of radiating out from the transmitter.
God, so weird.
It's very hard to imagine.
It's weird to think that they're all passing through you right now. Every station,
lots of other information too, because of the other things that are being transmitted on the electromagnetic spectrum.
All the mobile phones.
Is every mobile phone conversation on a different frequency?
It's quite complicated the way that works.
I shouldn't ask about it now.
No. When your phone moves to a different cell, it gets assigned a frequency in that cell, I think.
Okay.
But anyway, we could have a new encyclopod about that, maybe.
Maybe. Not for a while.
Probably not.
No.
Had enough of electromagnetism for the moment.
And then there's the receiver part of the radio, I guess. So in the receiver, you have the aerial, which picks up thing. And for FM, it tends to be a sort of metal aerial that sticks out the top. That's what the aerial is for. You see on cars on a portable radio with the aerial sticking up. For AM, the aerial's usually a little tube type thing inside the radio.
What about digital?
Like, is that like
a coherer? I think digital uses the... Yes, it's kind of like a coherer, in fact.
Yeah.
I think digital uses the same style of aerial as FM.
Because my one has, like, a way you can plug in little wires and run wires, like, to two places, and it'll take the best.
Yeah, well, you can actually use a wire as an aerial as well. And it depends on the shape of it, how good a signal you get from it, though. And then the next thing after the aerial will be the tuner, and the tuner is what filters out all the other stations that you're in and leaves only the one you're interested in. So that's usually a variable capacitor. Capacitor is an electronic component that only allows a certain frequency band to pass through, basically.
Okay.
And a variable one in a radio means you can change the band it passes, so... If you have an old dial radio, it's usually, when you turn the dial, you're usually changing the amount of overlap between some metal plates inside, and that's changing the capacitance and changing the frequency that passes through.
Can I insert a little anecdote?
Yeah. Go on, then.
Mr. Sadler, my once...
I think we need one.
He once came back from America with a radio, and so the frequency range was bigger than the ones that we have here. And he was able to listen in to certain phone calls in his house because it was a house phone thing. And so he'd like listening to some phone call and then reveal like information about his girlfriend or something that he shouldn't know. Which is quite funny. And he did something else with it. I can't remember what. It was one of those, he could find some things on it that he shouldn't be able to find.
Well, Sadler. I don't know whether they're encrypted now or anything, but you used to be able to pick up like police radio and things if you had a shortwave receiver.
That sounds like a good segue into amateur radio.
Hmm.
Again, I don't have that much to say about it, but I thought I'd better mention it. Sometimes called ham radio.
Hmm.
I think that's because of the first syllable of amateur sounding like ham.
Amateur.
Basically, there's people out there, quite a lot of them in fact, seemingly, who like to play with radials, and they have their own like receivers and transmitters, and they can like just fiddle around, talk to other people. Sometimes they're doing more than that. Sometimes they're like, they can help out in emergencies, or they can there's lots of applications for it, just communicating between places very far apart, as radio is quite good for, really. But you need a license in order to use that kind of equipment. I mean, there are restricted radios you can get. This is sort of like one, this walkie-talkie, because you can't tune it to transmit on a frequency that is used by something important, like commercial radio or like plane communication system or anything. But, you know, you can get these amateur ones that you need a license for that shows you're going to be responsible with it. You're not going to mess about on the public airwaves.
The walkie-talkies we got in Florida had 12 channels on them, and the thing is that it's like 12 channels that are just any company can pay to use those channels for their walkie-talkies, but all the walkie-talkies in America seem to use one of those 12 channels.
Wow.
So if you're in a theme park and you're about to split up, you go through all the channels, like people on that one, people on that one, Spanish people on that one, and you get, I want a channel. If it's Spanish, it's fine, because you'll know if it's someone talking to you or not, but, you know, it's hard. And then I realised when we got them over here that means that their frequency range is American, so they're probably not legal over here, because they're licensed there, but not here. So it's not that, well, they're not illegal, but they might not, the channels on which we can, they're preset, and you can only use them on those might not be, I'm assuming they will, because it's unlikely that they'd have a range here that they use for police, which...
It's unlikely they would overlap with any of the commercial stations, but I know different ranges are used for different things in different countries, so it's possible they'd overlap with something they shouldn't, at least be on a frequency you're not supposed to use without a license.
Hmm. Do we have much more?
Oh, just the components in the receiver, really.
Okay,
After the signal goes through the tuner, you're left with the pretty much the same signal that went out from the transmitter, just the one station. So then it needs to be turned back into a sound signal. And how difficult this is to do depends on the type of radio. For AM, you really just need to pass it through another capacitor to filter out the high radio frequencies and what's called a rectifier, which just takes away all the signal that's going in one direction so that you're left with a signal that's this is kind of hard to explain on the radio. It's easier with diagrams, but it's like the signal from the tuner will be sort of oscillating in both directions, and you want to
of course
turn it into.
Will.
It just goes up and down a lot, and you want to filter
okay, it goes
that
up and down
out
a lot. Yeah, that's the kind of language
you
need.
Get a smooth
need.
Signal. So yes,
okay.
You can do that.
Stuff happens.
Yeah,
basically.
And for FM, even more stuff happens. And
okay.
For DAB, wow. An unbelievable amount of stuff
wow.
happens.
A lot of ones and a lot of zeros.
Yes. Mm. But then right. at the end of it, you get the audio signal, which goes through the final audio amplifier, which would be the transistor, which is where the
transistor
radio comes from. And then finally into a loudspeaker. Or
Yay.
Two if it's FM stereo.
And that's and how then, you're hearing this now,
and then
except
you hear it.
A lot of the stuff in the middle didn't happen for this.
Yeah, lots of different stuff happened
yeah.
instead.
And this is pre-recorded, so
yeah.
it's
yeah.
quite different.
Or is it? Look behind you! It is.
What did you see? I want to know. When you looked behind you, what did you actually see?
Email in.
Yeah.
To someone at encyclopods.co.uk.
Yeah.
I think so.
Who knows? It's been 10 months.
It has been a while.
Did I renew it?
I hope you did. Okay, you're at the end of your technical stuff.
I think so, yeah.
Okay, I've said this a few times already, but isn't it weird that there is so much stuff all around us? So many things use, maybe not radio waves technically, but stuff that's near them on the electromagnetic
yes.
spectrum, like mobile phones and, you know, signals between planes and boats and... You know, police.
Was it you find that weird? I find it weird that the electromagnetic spectrum can heat things with microwaves, can send sound, can is everything you see.
Yes.
That's quite freaky.
Which is weird.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's weird that, you know, we evolved to use, to be able to see light, but it's not really inherently different from these other ones. It's just that we evolved to see it because it's useful.
Yeah, in fact, some animals can see different ranges from
yeah.
us. Like bees can see ultraviolet.
Yeah, I'm
for
sure
example.
There's some animal that can see infrared.
Yeah,
and bats.
So. Maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
If they, well, people claim they can see in the dark, and infrared's what we would use to see in the
they
dark.
They use
that's
sonar,
true, yes.
though, I think.
So,
yes.
Yeah.
Technically, if give it a couple million years, we could evolve to, like, interpret radio waves. But if you think about it, if
maybe.
That started happening, like, how much noise we've created
yes.
for ourselves,
ooh, wow.
that could
ooh,
be the death of
weird.
Us.
Yeah.
If someone was born like that, there's no way they'd close
yeah,
down
they'd
all the radio
insane.
Waves in the world just for them.
Yeah, they'd go insane.
Well, unless, but I think that they're born that way, they'd
story
be
about it.
Could they, we could wear some hat that could block it out.
Yeah, possibly.
One of those
like some
tin foil.
Oh, well, yes. I suppose they could walk around with a radio blocker.
Oh yeah,
live
yeah. They would have to get
cage.
Like special
in fact,
permission.
They wouldn't need headphones. They could just like broadcast, and like no one else would hear it, but they'd hear it.
What?
They could broadcast on a very, very, like very close to them, rather than wearing headphones.
Oh, yeah.
They could
just
broadcast
it to
their
nice
brain.
That's true. Yeah.
Bird tweeting
oh.
soundtrack or something. Yeah.
What else could they do?
I don't know.
Imagine seeing the other. Imagine seeing microwaves or.
Imagine
like
being able
look,
to
could you imagine them looking like waves or something weird but they might they just look like light apart from
yeah.
they wouldn't necessarily be a colour.
Wow, this is getting deep.
Yeah,
deep. But anyway, as I said before, I think radio as the combination of both radio waves on the electromagnetic spectrum and an audio broadcast, an audio like program, is probably sort of declining now because of lots of different things. I mean, I know the only time I've listened to the radio recently was the dark time between when my iPod broke and when I got it fixed. But I do listen to podcasts, which are basically audio programs in the spirit of the old radio shows, and we still all use radio signals for various things. So,
can I give an example?
Does it really matter? Yep.
I have a radio-controlled Dalek.
Yes, exactly. Radio-controlled things that use, like,
yes.
pulses, combinations of pulses, like codes to transmit
no,
information
just,
to each
just
other.
Just Daleks.
Okay. Yeah.
Furthermore, the Dalek voice is created by an oscillus... it's a ring... No, it's a modulator, a ring modulator that they do that with.
Mm.
And the modulator is part of it, of a radio.
Yes.
Woo. It's weird how everything links up. That's what I like about Encyclopods. Sometimes you find a link somewhere where... You're just like, whoa, that sort of makes sense. It's
yeah.
like when you're walking in the city and you go to a place that you've never been before and then you...
But it fills the gap between two
yeah.
other places that
and
you
and then
have
you come
been.
Out somewhere and you're like, oh god, this is where this is.
Yes.
That happened to me today.
Oh. In Edinburgh
yeah,
or Glasgow.
Edinburgh. Hmm. It's a bit I've never been to.
I still nice. Find bits I've never been to sometimes.
We had a scary walk back from Heather's recently.
Only when Tim that. Was leading us.
Well, it was scary when you were leading us
no,
too.
No, it was nice.
Yeah, you led us along by in a very scary looking bit with by the canal that looked
the
like a horror film
nice.
With an abandoned terrifying warehouse on the other side.
Why did you find that? Was a church.
Black windows. No, there was a warehouse on the other side.
Where was that?
We were walking my bike route.
Oh dear.
Oh, and apparently during the night it's scary.
You mean the one where there's like
it's near Leamington Liftbridge.
Abandoned warehouse on the right if you're walking out of town where you can just see it with all the bars and
yeah,
the
are we getting off topic?
Scary. Here we are.
But that's okay, it's near the end.
Yeah, it's a sign that we should probably wrap up soon.
No!
We've been going for so long.
Aww.
It's heartbreaking, isn't it?
This is a great episode. I've enjoyed it.
Good.
Enjoyed it too,
you enjoyed
actually.
Your first one?
Yes. I'll be back for many more.
Yay, that's good.
I was a virgin, but now I've been encyclopodded.
There's a quote for the website.
Yeah, it is. Makes me want to make a quote thing just so I can put that in it.
How many encyclopoints does he get for that?
You get 100 encyclopoints
wow.
for that quote. James, do you have any great quotes for us?
nothing to match that.
Well, thanks for being on it. I mean, your technical knowledge was... I don't think I could have done that. Technical stuff.
I hope it was remotely interesting, any of it. You can edit bits out if you like, I'm sure you will.
Well, I always do, but. Okay, that's the end of the stuff about radio, and we will be back hopefully before too long.
Maybe in 2 weeks.
That's what I'm aiming for. 2 weeks from now, we will have a nice show with more juicy educational goodness and rephrased entries from Wikipedia. for your pleasure. Oh, I should make the disclaimer that this is not an academic source, and it's probably horribly inaccurate because most of it is from Wikipedia.
Please don't learn from us.
Yeah, please.
And a lot of my anecdotes and stories are probably not true.
Probably
they're true.
Like Chinese whispers that changed over the years. Okay, but they're still good. Say goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye, everyone.
Send email to someone at insectmoto.co.uk. Bye.
Winky.
Adios.